Right. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm really excited for today's guest, Rhiannon Lockhart. Rhiannon is a holistic nutritionist and weight loss coach who helps women boost energy, balance hormones, and build sustainable habits without restrictive dieting. She's passionate about helping women feel strong and confident in their bodies through practical nutrition and lifestyle strategies. In today's episode, we're diving into pre- and post-workout nutrition, give some sample meal ideas, we'll talk about protein intake, supplements, and also talk about how to eat and sync workouts with the different phases of your cycle for better results and energy. So welcome to the podcast, Rhiannon.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat today.
Yeah, and I know just before we jumped on, we were talking about, like, I think this is such an important topic and there's lots of buzz around what we should be eating pre and post workout. I know protein is like the buzzword of the last two years.
At least it's not keto anymore.
No, I feel like it's been cortisol and then protein. And I think we're starting to kind of shift into talking a little bit about fiber, but I wanted to have a conversation around that and like how much protein should we actually getting. So so maybe we'll just kind of get right into it, and maybe you can share. I know on your social media on Instagram you've been sharing about some of the things that you've been having, especially before your pre-workout, like what to have first thing in the morning if you're getting up and going and doing a workout. So I'd love to kind of dive into pre-workout nutrition and what that looks like what's our ideal, what should we be having before we work out, and even diving into like fasted workouts at the same time.
So this is one thing that you probably say a lot to your clients as well. So the word "it depends" is probably going to come up like a lot in this conversation today, because even when we talk about pre-workout nutrition, it's like, well, it depends on what type of workout you're doing, what time of day you're working out at. Like, let's give the example of first thing in the morning. So if you get up and you're like, okay, I am literally rolling out of bed and then heading to the gym, your basement, like whatever it is, and you've got maybe a 20-30 minute window, okay, what should you be having?
Yeah.
In those cases, I'm often being like, grab something that's going to be more carb heavy. So not necessarily like unless you're going and running a marathon first thing in the morning, like you don't need some kind of gel or like straight honey or anything like that. Like, a banana is probably going to do you pretty okay if your workout's going to be anywhere from like 30 to 45 minutes. And having that kind of aim for that like 30 minute window beforehand. Sometimes, like, you know, I like a little bit of an extra boost for myself, so I'll have a little bit of a coffee beforehand too. So that kind of acts as my like
caffeine
pre-workout. I know some people will have like a pre-workout and stuff, and you know, I don't love those just because the caffeine intake, especially if you are a coffee drinker, like can be a little intense. Also like digestive symptoms wise, like I feel like some people are just running to the bathroom. So depends on the person.
On that one too, is sometimes I see like women not eating anything. So getting up early, not eating anything, slamming a pre-workout and then going and doing like a HIIT workout.
I literally just had this conversation with like four different people in the last week. Where it's like, okay, first off, you're going to notice how fatigued you are by the end. Like you will see that, especially too, because a lot of people that are doing this, like either they're doing it intentionally or they're just getting up and going because they don't have time in the morning. And then also they come home and they're hustling to get ready for work. So they're literally going off of a HIIT workout and coffee. And that is like, we're sending our hormones for like a spiral. Not only are our blood sugars crashing because we now have just burned off everything in our stores, and now we're just hitting ourselves with coffee. So it's like, you're about to go on a huge roller coaster for the rest of the day when you do that. Like a lot of people will start noticing that mid-afternoon, they're starting to have those like energy crashes. They are truly having these huge sugar cravings. Like that's just this roller coaster that you're setting yourself up on. Versus if you're going in with fuel, you'll notice that you're performing way better. So you're getting more bang for your buck. And then also throughout the day, like you've already got some energy in the tank. So you're not just depleting yourself before you've even started your day.
Yeah, it's almost like you're going to play catch up for the rest of the day.
There's
something in the tank. And I imagine that a lot of that probably comes because it's almost, especially if weight loss is the goal, when then it's like, well, I should be eating less. Well, then I'm not going to have something before I work out, and maybe that will help me tap into burning my fat stores faster if we do it that way. But oftentimes it's just, it's the opposite. And then it's like you're running off of caffeine and probably adrenaline from your workout, and it's just like kind of a recipe for disaster, really. I see that pretty frequently, I would say, in my practice.
I used to do that. Like, I can't eat. I'm so guilty of that. I remember years ago, I used to get up and I would go to a 6 a.m. spin class with nothing in my body, not even coffee, like literally nothing in my body, just maybe a sip of water.
Yeah.
Get to my spin class, do a 45-minute spin class, which if you've ever been, like, they're intense, especially like, I used to go to one called Ride that the music just gets you. They had great music. But you were at a club at like six in the morning. So already just from that alone, you have music blaring in your ears. You are doing a crazy HIIT workout. You're pushing your body. And then I'd leave and I'd walk around the corner and go to Starbucks, and I'd get a grande blonde roast with some soy milk in it. Like, whole, no wonder I had the jitters an hour later. Like, what did I just do to myself? And like, I'd be crashing by 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I couldn't work anymore. So until I like actually learned how to properly fuel myself, I remember like learning about it in school actually at the time. And I was like, this seems incorrect. Like, don't we lose fat when we are, when we exercise fasted, it's actually better because you're losing this. In theory, I understand where people are coming from, but in actual practice, like, no, that does not work at all. It's like we said, a recipe for disaster, and also is going to inhibit your performance and then have long-term negative side effects. I didn't get my period for months at a time when I was doing that. Like, my period cramps were insane. Like, until I backed off and actually understood and ate more, like, I was a disaster hormonally too.
Yeah. Well, I think that scenario is just, that's like putting yourself into fight or flight mode, and then especially if you lose your cycle, the body's like, that's just a big sign to me that, hey, that's like way too much stress going on.
Yeah.
and not good. And then I think you have the flip side of it, is like, well, maybe from that calories in, calories out standpoint, I understand that, but more so it's like, well, if you're looking to build muscle and have a better performance, then you want to have some fuel in the tank. So would you say, like, before, so let's maybe look at a couple scenarios. So first thing in the morning, so if someone's getting up early, like they're going to that 6 o'clock, doing a workout at 6 o'clock, and they only maybe have half an hour to maybe get a little bit of something in. So you would say primarily carbohydrates in that case?
Yeah. If you can toss in a little bit of protein, great. Protein is going to make the most sense afterward for sure, especially if you are limited for time. But if you can get up and you have, let's say you get up and you have 30 minutes beforehand, you actually have time to sit down. If you do like Greek yogurt with some fruit and maybe a little bit of granola, if that's your thing, great. Or if you can even pop in like a hard boiled egg and a piece of fruit, like those are easy and quick options, especially when you're on the go. So those are my typical like go-tos for people. I can't remember if I even mentioned this, like a protein shake, if you're that kind of person, having half of it before and half of it after, and making it really simple, like just carbs and protein, so that you actually are going to absorb it a little bit faster, and then have some of that protein in there for kind of that recovery and building afterward.
So you don't necessarily want to be like low, if you're having a shake, let's say, you don't necessarily want to be adding like peanut butter and like a whole bunch of other things into it. That's like just protein and probably a fruit, I guess.
Like
banana. Even berries might have a little bit too much fiber, would you say? Or
Even just like not even enough like carbs in general to hit the goals. But I would, because too, like when we're talking about fat is important. It is important that we're having it in our day. But when we're talking about using it for pre-workout, it's slowing down that digestion of our carbohydrates when we need that hit a little bit faster. So you're not going to get the energy that you need until maybe later in your workout. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, well now I don't need it anymore because I've just finished. Right. So you want it to fuel the entire workout.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then what about if somebody is maybe working out, let's say maybe in the afternoon, or they have time to eat, let's say they're having lunch and then maybe going to for a workout at, I don't know, 2 or 3 o'clock, a couple hours after. Okay to eat a bigger, robust meal at that time?
Totally. Great idea too, because I wouldn't say, you know, you're not doing it like an hour before because you're probably going to puke it up everywhere, depending on the size of a workout that you're doing. But it's a really good idea to actually focus on carbs, protein, fats at that lunchtime meal. And then if you need, even beforehand, like if you're that person that you feel like you have a not faster metabolism, but like you are going to be hungry again later, good idea to have something a little bit carby as like a quick snack right beforehand. But having that full meal kind of 1.5 to 2 hours, even before 3 hours, you're going to, I feel like a lot of people perform better later in the day because we have more fuel in the tank.
Yeah.
So a lot of those people that are working out at that time, like making sure that you are eating really good and dense meals beforehand is going to be beneficial for that.
Okay. Yeah. I find I'm kind of that, like I notice if I work out in the afternoon, but it's not always doable depending on what you have for work, but have a couple meals in you already, I find I get more energy.
Lift a little heavier, go a little faster. Sometimes I like if you're running or something, I find that's a little challenging because I'll get cramps a lot faster when I have more food in my body. But
yeah, that's true. Yeah. And what about protein? Like, is it necessary? Like, should people be slamming protein shakes like the minute that they're done their workout?
Yeah. I love that this has been debunked because I think there was such a long period where people were like, as soon as I'm finished working out, like I need to get my protein shake in. You see all these guys at the gym, like shaking them up in those shakers. And you're like, you don't actually, like there is no 30 minute window after you've worked out. Like your body is still in that recovery build mode for hours later. So if ideally, if you can get it in within that like kind of 1 hour post-workout, that's great just because you have depleted quite a bit. And then you are going to, especially when we're talking like that blood sugar piece too, being able to kind of refuel afterward will set you up for more success for the rest of the day, help with your energy levels throughout the day, help with your cravings throughout the day. But if you like, if you cannot for the first like 30 minutes, you're going to be totally fine. Like you will be okay. And try to make sure that you are having a real meal, especially if you have only had a snack. So if you're waking up and you are eating a banana. So this is, let me backtrack a little bit. I say this is the only time I'd say try to eat a little bit sooner is if you did like just wake up, you had one banana and some coffee, you went to your workout and then you came home. I'd say if you can try to get that 30 minutes in, that's going to be a better option for you because you're already like, you've probably burned through, depending on your workout, that whole, all the carbs from that banana. Like you've already burned through your tank. So having something is going to help with that cortisol, that kind of energy throughout the day, those cravings later, if you can have it a little bit sooner. But for those people that are kind of that afternoon, you've got time.
And I think it kind of matters more like making sure you're getting in enough protein throughout your day overall rather than just be like, well, I'm going to just have, maybe not eat any protein on my other meals and just have a protein shake after.
You're going to hit 80 grams right here.
That may be a little bit challenging.
Having it, like what matters more is your overall intake throughout the day. So hitting the proper goals, like your macros in general throughout the day is going to be more important than hitting them at specific times. So if you can even spread out your protein throughout the day, aiming for like that 30, 40 grams a meal, that's going to give you more benefit than trying to like restrict it the rest of the day and then just slam it because that's all you have time for.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So for post-workout meal, so you ideally want to have, would you say it's similar to pre-workout, like more carb protein, less fiber and fats, or still dependent kind of on the timing and things like that?
It's going to be dependent on the timing, but I do want people to have, so like lean into fats a little bit more after their workout because still like you don't need that carb hit right away. You are still going, everything's going to digest a little bit slower, but having the fats in there is also like when we talk about blood sugar, it's going to slow down your digestion of everything. So let's say if you're having a smoothie afterward, having a small amount of like peanut butter in there is not going to be a terrible thing. Like that's when I want people to kind of focus on a true meal is after their workout, still leaning heavy into the protein. Or like if you just had lunch 2 hours before and you've still got like 2 hours till dinner and you are feeling a little hungry and you have like a banana and protein powder mixed together, that's not going to be the end of the world. But I'd say like if you're eating immediately afterward and you're having a meal, you can go all three, go for it.
Have fun. All three, yeah. do all three macros, but
yeah.
Kind of, I always pick your protein kind of first and then build out around it, would you say?
Yes. Sorry. I just had to have a little sip of water there. Yeah. Sorry, if everybody heard the gulp because I tried to mute it and I didn't mute it at the right time.
No, all good.
Sorry, can you repeat that one? I was distracted by my own drinking.
So would you say, like, if you're building a meal after, like, pick your protein first and then kind of build out the rest of your meal around it?
Yeah. And also, like, I would say your protein and even your carbs.
And your carbs. Okay.
Yeah. So even if you're choosing something, like, it can be like a fibery, like, you can still choose something like quinoa or oats. Like, those are still going to be great options for you to utilize. Because it is still going to be that little, like, a bit of a slower burn to sustain you for a longer period, but still give you the carbs that you need. Like, I want people to remember that you do need carbs throughout your day. Because I feel like we swung so far the other way.
I'm glad that you said
that. At one point that people are like, oh, no carbs all the time.
Well, there's that fear, like, around carbs. And I think especially for women and, like, our mental health, our hormone health, thyroid health, like, so important to have carbohydrates. And I always say it's not about, like, taking carbohydrates out. It's just making better choices and picking ones that have a little bit more fiber and nutrients in them, or pairing them with a protein and a fat to help mitigate that too. Yeah. So I'm glad that you said that, because I get a lot of the fear around carbohydrates.
Yeah,
it's like, no, ladies especially.
Yeah, well, and especially ones that are physically active too. Like, if you're working out, you will notice such an impact. Like, I remember years ago, there was this, like, people would say that, you know, when the keto diet was really hot, people were like, well, you know, your body gets used to no carbs. You go into ketosis and your body starts burning ketones and then you have all this energy that way. And it's like, nobody did. Nobody, I don't think anybody actually could say that they were performing as well as they were when they were eating carbs. And you see this, like, most people that are physically active, most people that are, like, athletes, they're demolishing carbs. Like, that's a huge source of their diet, or a huge source of food in their diet. So I think for a lot of women, especially, like, when we are cycling, when we are, like, especially if you're trying to conceive or things like that, like, they're going to be so important to include when you're also working out, to actually give you that energy and make you feel stable throughout the day.
Well, I think even going back to what you said about if someone has lost their cycle, I believe you have to eat around 250 grams of carbohydrates a day to get the cycle to come back on track, which might be a lot for a lot of people. But carbs are important. And I also have seen, like, people who are doing like long distance, like marathons or ultra runners, I've seen some of them actually tend to be a little bit more, like, eating more vegan, vegetarian, which actually does make sense to me in some cases, because they're able to have access to that energy quicker than if they're eating tons of, like, animal proteins and stuff like that. I don't know if I would really recommend that, but interesting.
No, I remember actually, like, I think the exact same thing, because it was years ago. I think I read, like, Rich Roll's something. I can't remember what it was, but and this at the point, I think I might have been vegetarian or vegan. I don't remember. But I understood where it's like, especially those ultra marathoners, even Ironmaners, like, you're using so much. So having, when a lot of your protein sources are also going to be carbohydrate sources, like, it makes sense. There's another point I actually had with that too, and now I can't remember it. So sorry about that.
Come back to you. No. And I think with just to wrap up around the low carb diets and keto diets, I don't know about you, but I very rarely have seen somebody be able to maintain that diet for the long term. They tend to go into that, like, I'm keto for this amount of time, but then Christmas comes and all of a sudden I'm not keto anymore when there's treats and stuff. And then, okay, January. And I find it's just kind of that up and down. So I always say, like, that sustainability piece is like, do you really feel like you're never going to eat carbohydrates again? Probably not realistic for most people.
Yeah. Well, and two, like, how much of that sometimes, because we get so focused on weight, we get so focused on that number on the scale that we totally ignore what's our fat mass, what's our muscle mass. Like, if people are doing keto sometimes, they might be losing weight, but they're not necessarily losing the stuff that we want. Like they may not be losing a ton of fat percentage and they may not be gaining muscle mass, especially if they are eating like a ton of fat and really not a lot of protein, which often is actually what's happening on a keto diet. Like it's not a protein heavy diet by any means if you're doing it from like the true state of it.
I think it's like 60 or 70% fat and then like 10 to 20 protein and then like 5 to 10% carbohydrates or something, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact ratio.
I don't remember anymore because it is not something I dole out often.
No. And like maybe it has some therapeutic benefits.
No, totally.
It was actually created for, I think it was kids.
Epilepsy in kids. Yeah.
But anyways, while we're on the conversation with macros, protein.
Yes.
Talked about everybody's like, get your protein in. Protein. How much do we need for women? Like if we're looking to, let's say maybe both scenarios, lose weight, put on some muscle, how much should we be aiming for throughout the day?
So typically what you're going to hear is 1 pound for your target weight. Mm. Now, with that said, that will also be dependent on how much you're trying to lose and how much you're starting at. So what I often will recommend for people is like start with tracking your protein intake first on like find out what your baseline is. Because if you're starting at 60 grams of protein and then someone recommends to you like, oh, you need to take 150, that's aggressive. That's a big jump and it's going to be really hard. You're going to get really defeated and you're not going to do it. But if we're like, okay, starting at 60, okay, let's bump that up to 90. Okay, now let's bump that up to 100. Now let's bump that up to 120. I find like most people can get away with doing like 120 to 130 and feel pretty good. And it's also pretty doable. If you think about it, if you're having 30 to 40 grams at every meal, and then you have, so let's say you do 40 grams at every meal. And then that means, what is that? 20, you're already at like 120. Am I right? 40?
If you get 40.
80, 120. What? Yeah. You're already at 120 for the day. So if you're only eating 3 meals, fine. A lot of people are typically doing like 3 meals and a snack and also like breakfast. I find a lot of people aren't eating enough protein anyway. So let's say you're maybe getting 20 grams of protein at breakfast. Then you can spread that out even through like snacks and stuff. And 120 feels like their realistic number. But oftentimes people are now quoting like 1 gram per pound of ideal, or 1 gram of protein per pound of ideal body weight.
So that would be like, let's say somebody is 200 pounds and their ideal body weight is 150 pounds. Mm-hmm. They would aim to eat 150 grams of protein per day.
Which sometimes feels like a lot for people. So that's why I kind of am like, you know what? If you can do the like 120, that's probably, you're going to notice a huge impact. And if that's okay, like, and I think this is where people like you and I come in, because you have to work with it on an individual basis. Like you can't give this blanket statement, because if somebody's dealing with like major kidney issues, maybe they actually can't do that. If they have other health conditions, like maybe that's actually not right for them. Or again, if they've been chronically under eating for years and now they're trying to like boost their protein intake, boost their calorie intake, and they're trying to do it just, you know, based off of whatever TikTok hack they've seen. And now they've gained a ton of weight because they've been chronically under eating. And now they're like, oh, I need to eat 2000 calories. And I've been typically eating 1000. Like, then you're just swinging in the opposite direction without strategically increasing and going, building yourself up. And the same thing goes with protein too. So if you're like chronically under eating protein and then you're just swinging to that 150, not to say that like something bad's going to happen, but it might, your body might not be cool with it right away.
Right. So I want to actually, you had 3 points that I wanted to come back to. I think start with the last one that you just mentioned. So if somebody's wanting to, well, I think there's a couple of things there, because if you have somebody only eating 60 grams of protein, and let's say that their goal is weight loss, and then all of a sudden they're eating 120, like that's a lot more calories for one. Mm-hmm. And so it might, I don't know if you ever get this, but sometimes I've had people be like, are you sure I'm allowed to, not allowed, but are you sure I'm like, I feel like I'm eating way more. Mm-hmm. Which I think sometimes what I'll come back to is like, it's kind of like you're almost eating more in order to eat less in a sense, because protein is so satiating. So then you might not be as quick to grab like the cookies and the chips and the sweets, mm-hmm. and those more palatable foods that are easy to overdo. My other question for you, like around protein sources, what mm-hmm. would you recommend, kind of, what are the best forms of protein sources? Animal, plant-based, combination of them? Should everybody get a protein powder?
Yeah. That's a great question. So I know you probably agree with me, and I might get some hate on this one, but I do find that animal sources are going to be some of the best because they are going to give you all of the essential amino acids. They are going to be absorbed better for you. Like, it's just, and they're also, the one reason I also like them is when we're talking about like the overall macro piece, like if you are someone that is actually counting them, it's a little bit easier because they're also typically like a protein. Like, that's what you're getting from them. With a lot of the vegan and vegetarian sources, it's also going to be a carbohydrate. And then,
so if someone's doing like beans and quinoa and then stuff like that,
it's going to be really easy to like maybe overload on the carbohydrates depending on what your needs are.
Yeah.
I do think that they are an essential part of our diet because they are going to give you really important fiber. They are, which is necessary. I think I don't remember if we were talking about this before or if we have actually talked about this on the podcast itself, but like the conversation is kind of starting to swing to fiber a little bit too, especially online. And I do think we've chronically been under eating fiber for like years because people, especially when we talk about like Atkins and those kind of things, like people are avoiding it. And there's certain ones that a lot of people have sensitivities to, so they're not eating a vast amount of fiber. So I think, you know, kind of from that perspective, I've totally lost the mark where I was going with that conversation.
It's okay. All good. Fiber and protein. Fiber getting more popular. But I don't know if you see that this comes up on your social media, but I see, like, I guess it's just part of my algorithm, but I watch and see tons of what I eat in a day videos.
Yeah.
And I feel like I see some of them and it's like the only thing that they care about is protein. So it's like we're doing protein shakes in the coffee. We're doing a protein bar multiple times a day. Like, it's just, and yeah, it's kind of almost like too much, almost processed protein. Yeah. And then no emphasis on, like, so a lot of the meals are, there's no color, there's no vegetables, there's no diversity in there. So I'm like, I think when we just like pick one macronutrient and like, that's the only thing that matters, it's like we're missing the bigger picture there.
And that is what matters the most, is like you are getting everything on your plate. You do want to make sure that you're including all the things. And like you just said, we always focus on this like one macronutrient. Like if you think about it, even when keto was happening, fat was the huge focus.
Yeah.
Low carb. Carb was the focus of like avoiding it in general. Now it's protein. Now it's going to be fiber. Like, and I know fiber is like a part of a macronutrient, but there's always these like singular food groups that we're talking about. Like, even remember when superfoods were a thing and specific food items would all of a sudden have the limelight. Like, it was like, blueberries are going to cure you. And it's like, okay, no.
No.
So I think like everything, like something is always sensationalized as like the thing that's going to fix you. And I think that's what everybody wants. They just want one thing that's going to fix them. And kind of going even back to what you mentioned about the like what I eat in a day, and then the question before that I totally lost the plot on, with like the protein powder piece too, is when we become so fixated on it, we're constantly searching for easy ways to get this in. Like, first and foremost should always be whole foods. That is going to be better for your body. You're putting in less like chemicals, you're putting in less ingredients that we don't really know. Like, first and foremost, real food. Secondary, you're looking for a protein powder that's going to be a better for you protein powder. We can kind of get into that if we want as well.
I wanted to save that one for when we talk about supplements, because that's probably the number one question I get asked, is like, what protein powder do you recommend? So I wanted to talk about the difference, like maybe plant-based whey, stuff like that. So we'll save that one. I wanted to go back to what you said about tracking your intake, which I think is such a smart thing to do, because it's like, we don't know what we don't know. So if you don't know, if you're not familiar what foods are high protein, then it's like, how do you know if you're going to hit 30 to 40 grams of protein at your main meals. You don't know unless you do track and have an idea around it. How long, like if you work with somebody, are you kind of the typical, would you give somebody like, here's your calorie amount, let's say they want to lose weight, here's a calorie amount to aim for, here's the macros, or would you more so like, let's just maybe track, see where we're standing first, and then make some adjustments, or how do you approach tracking in your practice?
Mm-hmm. I like tracking first and then making adjustments. I will. So I'll give an example. Actually, the past couple of weeks, I've been seeing some people that are doing a specific challenge with like a studio that I'm working with right now, a fitness studio. And they're all doing these like full body scans. So they're getting to know what their body fat percentage is, their muscle mass, their total weight, their BMI, which I don't know. We don't need that one. And that's a conversation for another day. But I was hoping it was going to be their like basal metabolic rate, but that's fine. But like, so they're getting to know a little bit more than just their weight, which is great because for me, long-term kind of, you can always put in those calculations and then you find out what's their best that they should be having in order to like build muscle mass, lose body fat percent, et cetera. So a lot of people are coming to me with this being like, hey, what are my macros? And I was like, oh, okay, back up for a second. Not yet. Sorry.
Yeah.
Track for like a week. Mm-hmm. Let's find out what your average is looking like. And then let's kind of reframe from there. Because like we've even chatted about, it's if you're starting, if I'm like, let's say I put in all my calculations and based on your weight, your height, your age, et cetera, it's telling me that, you know, you should be having a 2000 calorie diet. Now, if you've been eating 1200 calories for the last 4 years without realizing it, and you're like, oh, well, I need to like cut back even more. And then you actually track and you're really under eating, for me to swap up again, going that 2000 calories, we're going to see probably weight gain before we're going to see weight loss. Like slowly kind of meeting you where you're at is what's going to matter the most. So it is that like, let's track first, sort it out after, because then sometimes if you're just going from one side of the coin to the other, it's not necessarily going to have the benefits that we are told it's going to automatically.
Right. And I think it also depends on other things too. Like I always take into consideration like people's relationship to food. Sometimes tracking can be a little bit scary and confronting, but I sometimes say like, take the judgment out of it and just use it for information. Like I said, you don't know what you don't know. So if we don't know how much we're roughly consuming, we don't know what foods have high sources of, or good sources of protein and carbs and fats. I think it does teach you a lot about nutrition in that standpoint. And then like, you're not going to do it forever. It's just like a short learning period. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was basically going to say the same thing. Like, I feel like so many people have said to me recently how tracking has actually helped them understand food more and given them a lot more freedom with what they're eating. Because typically they would kind of go, oh, okay, you know, like let's say I'm eating out. I'm going to get this salad and I'm going to get a chicken breast on it. But then when they've actually kind of looked at their macronutrient intake and they're realizing that, oh, you know, like I do have a bit more wiggle room some days and I can go get the chicken fingers or I can get the burger with the bun on it. Like it gives them more food freedom versus consistently being in this diet mentality and like I need to eat as little as possible and then realizing like, no, I can fill my plate. Like I could have this entire plate of food right now and lose all the guilt around it. So I think it for some people can actually remove the guilt and shame around food and diet by tracking for a little while. And then even like, let's say they do the tracking just for information purposes. And then you start kind of refining you know what, like maybe actually let's try, you know, having some macro goals. Like, is that something you're comfortable with? If we are comfortable with that and we want to try hitting it again, like you're typically, I find a lot of my client base, I'm actually increasing what they're taking in to begin with.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And that
goes against everything we've been told. Eat less, eat less.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, again, it's that like, that like mind blowing, like, oh, I can feel full. That's okay. I didn't know that. Like, I thought I was just supposed to feel hungry all the time and be craving and be peckish and opening the fridge after dinner and looking for like whatever kids' leftover snacks that I have. Like, it gives a lot of information, I think, for people that they didn't know they needed.
Yeah. I didn't have a very good relationship with food like in my 20s. And actually, I followed if it fits your macros, which was like, you can eat whatever you want as long as you hit your macro intake. Not always like the best because you'd have people eat junk food and stuff like that. But it did teach me like, oh, if I have some of these fun foods, like it's not going to, like there are bigger things that matter. As like, you know, if I'm staying within my deficit or whatever, or my maintenance calories, like that's not going to, I used to be like, well, that food is bad. And if I eat those chicken fingers or chocolate, immediately it's going to make me gain weight, which is not true. So it's like that mindset shift, I think, has to change a little bit, especially around just that driving home of like, well, if weight loss is your goal, eat less. And just what you said, like we have to be hungry and starving and thinking about food all the time. It's like, absolutely not.
Totally. Yeah.
You don't need to at all.
No, it's not fun.
No. And I also think that takes up, like, I think about how much mental space that takes up when you're constantly focused on dieting your body and thinking about food all the time. And like your whole world just revolves around weight loss. And sometimes I'm like, man, there's so many other things that we could be like, of course we want to feel healthy and good, but I sometimes even say, take the emphasis off of weight loss sometimes, focus on having more energy, building some good muscle, and then sometimes the weight will follow.
Oh yeah. Well, I remember when I actually started eating more protein, I also definitely had some like food insecurities throughout my 20s. I was very, I remember like scrolling down the Tumblr pages of like, what was the saying that a lot of people used? Nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. And I remember like having like pictures of that posted and I was like, hey, yeah, we're gonna lose weight. Let's like eat less. And then when I shifted, I remember always constantly thinking about what my next meal was. Like always, what am I gonna eat next? Or like I'd be out with people and they'd order what they wanted and I didn't order what I wanted and I'd just be staring at their food the entire time, being like, I wonder if they notice that I'm looking, like maybe I can have a bite of that kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
And it wasn't until I shifted my protein intake actually that I and let go of that like restrictive mentality that I noticed A, shifts in my own body, and then B, changes in my hunger, changes in my cravings, changes in my thoughts about food. So I definitely like, that mental space piece was life changing. Mind you, now it's taken up for me with like everything I have to do for two small children, but you know.
Well, it just comes, like, I hear the term a lot, like food noise, and just like what you said, where it's like you're eat your meal and you're thinking about the next food, like counting down the minutes, or like you have a specific craving, you literally cannot think about anything until you go and satisfy that craving. But I think, protein, same for me, was protein and blood sugar. I think blood sugar, if somebody can nail down how to keep their blood sugar levels stable, I think it's honestly like life-changing on so many aspects, not just from a body composition standpoint, but from like a mental, emotional standpoint at the same time, like anxiety, with ADHD symptoms, if you're someone that gets lots of cravings, energy, like binge eating, there's so many things, hormone health too, right? So I'm like, if you can figure that out, eat protein, fiber, fats at your main meals. And I think in some cases it's almost like simplifying stuff a little bit. Yeah. I feel like sometimes we've complicated nutrition.
Oh yeah.
Maybe a little bit too much.
Oh yeah. There's too much. Honestly, I feel like there's too much information. There's so much black and white out there now where it's like, no, you're going to find the secret sauce is at that like special gray area in between. Like you don't, the black and white is probably not going to fit most people's lifestyles. And even the people that are saying they're doing it online are probably not doing it fully all the time. So they like, I remember it's always a highlight reel. So I think too, like that kind of gray in between is where you're going to find the happiness piece of like you going out and eat and you still have glasses of wine and like you still have fun with your friends and you don't feel like self-conscious about whatever you're choosing, you know, when you are out. Like all of those things kind of build up and give you that freedom, and it feels really nice when you can hit that point.
Yeah. And that consistency, like it should really be able to make it a lifestyle, and that habits that you don't really have to think about, because otherwise if you're like, I'm only doing this diet for 3 months, it's like, okay, well what happens when that diet ends? Usually people go back to eating normally and then it's just this constant like on a diet, off again, like back and forth, back and forth. But, just one last question. What, someone is wanting to track, what app do you recommend?
Yeah, so there's a couple. So typically there's two that I often will recommend, and it really depends on what your needs are and like how much you want to be tracking. I do really like Chronometer. Okay, I don't know how you actually pronounce it.
I think it's Chronometer.
Yeah. And I like it because, so I didn't even know this, but when I'm still breastfeeding, but a couple months ago I tried using it and I was putting everything in and it actually gave me an option for breastfeeding. So like it changed my calories and my macro needs based on that, which was really cool because I was like, a lot of breastfeeding moms, because there's so many people, and this is a whole nother topic, but there's like a lot of a significant population of like postpartum moms that are wanting to lose weight because they're trying to get back to like get their body back. And then they'll be tracking food, but like nothing's accounting for the fact that they're breastfeeding, or they're now their non-energy exercise or non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So like that's like the activity that you're doing around your house every day, chasing your kids, etc. Like it's not accounting for all of those things. But then, so I like Chronometer because it does actually account a little bit more for those kind of things for that like postpartum group. And then tracking wise, pretty easy. A lot of people I think use it too. The other one I like is actually you introduced it to me. You posted it on Instagram, that like Snap Calorie one.
Oh yeah.
Because I find I personally like it the best because I don't have the patience or the time to scroll through a bunch of stuff on my phone versus with that one.
How many eggs are you having?
Versus this one, I'm like, I don't even take a picture. I just voice note everything. So like, I'll just put it up to my mouth, be like, okay, I had like one whole egg plus like half a cup of egg whites and like a piece of, this is specific brand toast. And like, I can just read it out instead of having to be like, okay, now I have to type it in. Okay, now I have to do this. And as someone who is like on their phone often to begin with, it's really annoying for me to have to be on my phone or like being on any kind of device anytime I don't need to.
More than you have to.
Exactly. So it's like, I like to be able to just voice note it and then it auto populates and then I make like quick little changes. But that's actually one I find a lot of my clients are kind of gravitating toward because of that, or like any of the AI options. I feel like a lot of people are gravitating toward it. Obviously there's like imperfections with any of that kind of thing. But I do, it's going to be good enough, I think.
Yeah, and I was actually quite surprised. When I was first using it, I was like, there's no way this is going to be like super accurate just by taking a picture. And it actually was. And I was like, well, this makes a big difference. So, and sometimes I've actually used ChatGPT sometimes. Like, I'm just if I want to check a day, be like, hey, roughly, like, what did I kind of get today? Like, this is what I had and roughly the amount. Yeah. With tracking, though, I think you do have to kind of measure stuff out a little bit because that's where the challenge comes in with it. But I think that's a good tip for people just to get an idea of where they stand and then go in and make some adjustments depending if they're wanting to put muscle on or lose weight or whatever. I did want to get into supplements, like what's worth taking and what's not. Creatine. What are your thoughts around that? Have you taken creatine yourself?
I was going to. So I went out and I bought it and I was super stoked because I'm like, I'm hearing all this hype. I can't wait to find out for myself. And then started digging in more and realized, oof, I'm breastfeeding. I haven't checked that. And actually for like one of the populations that people are, if you are breastfeeding, pregnancy is one thing. Actually, pregnancy, it seems that it's okay for you to be taking creatine while you are pregnant.
Interesting.
I will like maybe fact check that one, but I'm like 99% sure on that. Okay. But with breastfeeding, because there's concern about creatine levels and what's coming in your breast milk and then what your baby's breast creatine levels are and if that's harmful for your kid, for their kidneys. And obviously like pregnancy and breastfeeding, there's such limited research that people can do. So there hasn't been any information on that unless there has been in the last like 5 weeks and I haven't noticed. But that's just, it kind of was one of the few supplements where I went, you know what? I'm not 100% comfortable with this yet. Yeah, so I'm going to wait it out. But my husband's taking it now. So, you know, I didn't waste it at least. But from like everything that I read and that I hear, it's almost like the next miracle supplement.
I know.
Like, are you taking it?
I was like, really? I was kind of similar. I tried it. It was actually before, I tried it a couple months before my wedding. I ended up getting really bloated from it. And so I'm about to try it again, but I think I'm going to start with a smaller dose, like 3 grams. I was starting with the 5 grams. So I think I'm just going to start slow and build up. But yeah, same thing. My husband takes it. He says that is like the single supplement that he has seen make a big difference, especially on like performance in the gym and changes in muscle mass. But there's some pretty good benefits around cognitive health, which I think are almost more intriguing to me than putting. I think I read something that like if you're sleep deprived, taking, but I think it's high doses. I want to say it was like 15 grams, which is pretty high for creatine. If you had a bad sleep the night before, taking creatine the next day can help with cognitive function. But
yeah, well, and I think that's why so many women are starting to gravitate toward it more too, because like, and especially because I feel like the major population that I hear talking about it the most are kind of that like perimenopause grouping. And a lot of that, like think about the cognitive function through perimenopause and how your hormones are starting to go chaotic and like people are experiencing way more brain fog than they ever have in the past. And they're seeing benefits because of that. So I find that even talking to a lot of my kind of perimenopausal menopausal clients, definitely recommending something like creatine, especially if they are working out. Like if you are working out, I do think creatine is going to be helpful. Do you need to do that like first couple weeks of overloading it? Probably not, because that's when a lot of people are starting to see that like digestive upset. I have done a little bit of reading about different types. So I think the main one is typically creatine monohydrate, and that can create a little bit more of that digestive disruption for some people. But I have heard that there's a couple types. So I know creatine HCL, I think is one that is a little bit easier for people to consume and not have that kind of like bloating, upset, those kind of things. But effectiveness wise, so like the efficacy of it, I don't know if it's as high as creatine monohydrate, because creatine monohydrate is the one that's been studied. So I think like if you're okay with kind of having a little bit of those imbalances for a couple of weeks, because again, like a lot of people will say once that's done, you start seeing that it's like, it's manageable and it actually goes away. And then you start seeing a lot of those benefits, the cognitive benefits.
Push through it if you're feeling a little.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, it's actually, I guess, I just thought of this, but you know, you've probably been there too, where you've had to recommend some like restrictive therapeutic diets for people. Yeah. And they kind of go through that first period of like, I feel kind of garbagey, and you have to warn them about like, you're going to maybe feel a little garbagey before you're going to feel good. So I kind of feel like it's the same thing with creatine. So it is something that is going to be helpful, particularly if you're working out, and then particularly if you are a woman going through perimenopause, could be beneficial from that front too. Again, like we start losing muscle as we age, and if it's something that we want to be able to maintain, which again we do, especially if you want to be 80 and not dealing with like hip surgery, something to consider. Yeah.
Or if you're losing weight too, and to preserve your muscle mass at the same time. Yeah. To take that. So usually creatine is in powder form.
Yeah.
Would you say starting with a lower, like 2 to 3 grams, and then working up to 5? Do you go past that? Should you have it, like if you're having a shake, would you have it before your workout, after? Does it matter?
Try to time it around the same time every day. That's going to be your better bet. If you can include it in like your post-workout shake, that's going to be fine too. With the types, I've definitely seen like creatine gummies that exist. Definitely not going to be as effective. Like dosing wise, I don't know what they're like, but from what I've seen, I think they're like a lower dose. And you can start at like 3 and work your way up. I think most people are recommending around 5 grams. I am now seeing some people being like, 10 grams, go for it. But err on the side of caution sometimes. Like we don't need to live in excess all the time. Like I feel like that's just part of the world we live in, where we're always trying to be like so optimized and on it. Like sometimes it's about feeling good in your body and not being like this superhuman.
Right. Yeah. Makes sense.
And no one I heard saying anything about like, if you're doing 10 grams a day, like how is that actually feeling on your digestive system? And mm-hmm. is there too much at some point?
Yeah, especially sometimes like, too much of a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's like stick with the studied dose and go for that.
Okay. Yeah. Good advice. What about branch chain amino acids? Necessary, unnecessary?
I don't necessarily think they're super necessary, especially if you're getting your protein from a lot of other sources.
Yeah.
I will say one I actually will not necessarily recommend, but let's say you're somebody that, and I give this example because like my husband could go all day without eating. He's in a physical job. He's like forgets to eat most of the time. So, or I have clients like this too, where they're just like, I just get so busy. I'm going around, like I'm running around. I don't have time. And maybe they've already had a shake. And I'm like, I still want you to get a little bit more protein in throughout the day. I wouldn't say do a branched chain amino acid. I would actually say do essential amino acids. You can still get some like.
What would be the difference? Oh, well, I mean. Yeah. What would be the
so branched chain amino acids are only going to be a select. Yeah. Essential amino acids are going to give you like all 9 of those essential amino acids versus your branched chain are giving you a limited number of those. But so oftentimes I'd say like do an EAA because you're going to get more bang for your buck. And especially if you are fasted or you are someone that like you're struggling to get enough protein. And because a lot of the times these are in like a well absorbable form, it can be helpful to have, not necessary though. Like if you have the extra budget and you don't mind spending like $40 for a tub of EAAs, go for it. The only downside I will say is they taste like garbage. So they do need to like, I got one from a brand that I really like and I like choked it back for a couple of days before I was like, I can't, like I'm going to throw up. So I got another one and I don't love a lot of the added ingredients, but it tastes great. So it's sometimes you just, yeah, I wouldn't, if you can get good ingredients that also taste good with it, sure. But it's not a necessary thing.
And okay, I wanted to talk about protein too.
Mm-hmm.
Whey protein, vegan protein, does it matter?
Depends on what your diet and what you can tolerate. I think whey protein is superior when we're talking from that like muscle rebuild, just anything kind of related to what you need it for protein. I do really like a whey isolate. It is, yeah, it's going to be that kind of more superior one. That said, I know a lot of people who can't tolerate that, me included. And I would love to, I wish I could take a vegan protein powder. I just think they all taste like garbage. Sorry.
I have a challenge with them too. They're just like very gritty.
Yeah.
I
always try because like, so I actually use a bone broth based one. Which I love the taste of it. Downside is it doesn't have all the amino acids in it. So with a whey protein powder or a vegan protein powder, they are built to give you all the amino acids that you need. With a bone broth protein powder, you don't. So you're getting a limited number. At the end of the day, like protein is protein. And as long as you're getting all the amino acids in different areas, like that one time is not going to kind of make or break you. If you're using as a post-workout, yes, I'd suggest using like a vegan or a whey protein because you do want to replenish all of those. But if you're just kind of using a protein powder to like supplement throughout your day because you can't get enough otherwise, something like a bone broth one can be a little bit better. I also find that like, you know, a lot of either the whey protein powder ones or the bone broth ones have less ingredients and more ingredients that you can pronounce versus a lot of the like vegan ones. I find they have a lot of fillers in them that just, you know, though they can also create some digestive problems. So people that can't have like whey, then they also can't have vegan. So like a rice protein powder sometimes is a better option, like a plain one or a hemp-based protein powder. Sometimes I'll tell people, like, if you can't tolerate them, just use plain hemp seeds, just a couple scoops. Okay. Still going to give you a good protein hit, and it is a complete protein. So those are, like, different options for people if they're, like, mixing it into a smoothie, too. Yeah.
It's a good tip. Seeds. Yeah. If someone's picking a protein, what should they look for? Like, if they're looking at the ingredients, what should you avoid? What should you, especially when it comes to sweeteners, what would you look for?
it's so hard. So you want to I would say like, it also depends. So I've actually had a bit of a reframe with my thoughts around sugar in protein powders, not like pure sugar, but if there's ones out there, like, and I don't think there are anymore. I think everybody's hopped on like the stevia bandwagon. But a lot, like most of them, you'll see stevia as kind of the primary sweetener, maybe like monk fruit. But personally, I like, if you are working out and you are then getting like a whey based protein that uses maple syrup as a sweetener, probably not actually the worst thing in the world, because now you're getting your carbs and your protein all in one scoop. I do see some that use like cane sugar actually. And that's, I think too, like when we're talking from a sugar perspective, if you can get ones that are using like coconut sugar or cane sugar, like that's actually probably not the worst thing in the world.
I imagine it tastes better too.
Probably. Yes.
I've never tried. I think I've only had like stuff with the sucralose and stevia is what I use now, but I do find that they're quite overpowering. Like when you put them in a shake, that's like, that's what you basically taste.
Yeah.
Oh, and most part. So yeah.
It's the aftertaste too. Like, and I don't mind stevia, especially if people are being conscious of like where they're getting their carbs from and they don't want to just add some more in. But again, there's also like controversy with stevia of, you know, and like the non-sugar based sweeteners of how that actually does affect our blood sugar. So it's kind of still up in the air of like, is it, I wouldn't say it's a negative thing. And I remember a while ago Googling, because I was like, my protein powder had it. I was having electrolytes with stevia in it. I had like the EAAs that had stevia in it. And I was like, okay, how much like is too much? And it's kind of like, we don't fully know it yet. Like we don't, if you can kind of go back and forth, you know, I think that's a better option. Like don't, again, that too much of a good thing can be true. So using something that does have stevia in it isn't going to be terrible, but I'd say just making sure you're not like overloading in every other area of your life too.
Coming back to those, like what I eat in the days, that's something I've also noticed too, where it's like people are having like sugar-free energy drinks in the morning or sugar-free coffee, and then putting sugar-free protein shake into the coffee and more sugar-free stuff, sugar-free protein bars all day long. And I'm like, okay, like too much, like too much of a good thing, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe that's not even the right wording. Like just too much of it. I think it's like, we don't really know.
And I don't really necessarily think it's a good thing. Like I don't love the taste of it.
No, me neither. So, but, and is it okay if somebody wants to have a shake every single day if they wanted to? And we talked about having more whole foods, but if someone's struggling to get that protein in, is it okay to just supplement with a protein powder if they need to?
Yeah, I find that, you know, especially if you're doing something like a whey-based protein, because the ingredients are typically a lot more minimal, like a whey-based isolate too. Even especially like if you can get a grass-fed whey, those are going to be like the more ideal as well. But having that every day is going to probably be more beneficial when we're talking about things like cravings, blood sugar balance, et cetera. If your other option is going to be, I'm running to McDonald's, like, the protein powder is going to be your better option mixed with like real whole foods. Because aside from that, you're typically adding in things that are going to have high fiber. You're like, my typical smoothie these days is like a protein powder, some chia seeds, some nut butter. And that depends on the nut butter. What else do I put in? Berries. I don't know. I've really been turned off bananas lately in a smoothie. I don't know what happened, but that used to be my go-to. Berries and then like spinach. So not only am I getting like a ton of other whole foods and antioxidants, et cetera, and then my protein intake, like it's going to be better than the alternative of me either not eating and running out the door or picking up something that probably also isn't great. Like, so you weigh your options there.
Yeah, I think I've seen you on your, on Instagram talking about like sometimes like if you don't have time, make a shake. It's better than skipping lunch or just grabbing something really quick. And I do that sometimes. Actually, I do that probably a lot more than I think that I do, but I don't have a lot of time. And I also feel like smoothies, I'm like, what else can I put in there? So much nutrients in one thing. And then it's like, even if the rest of your day goes to shit, it's like, at least you had that one meal that, you know, kind of hit a few markers anyways. So
And I often will use like a shake for lunch, just because I find that if I have it first thing, and this is very true for a lot of my clients too, having it as that like breakfast meal just doesn't feel satiating enough. Like they're like, I'm still hungry, or I'm craving more food like an hour later, versus if they have something that's savory and like visually big on the plate, they can last longer. So I find that like that, okay. And especially too, I find like lunch can be really tricky, even if you're working in like an office or something, because people will work through their lunch all the time. People are constantly on the go. So having that time is always like really beneficial for them.
Yeah. Or sometimes I see, like, especially if you haven't prepped anything, and I'm like, that might be, it's almost like you're swapping lunch and breakfast sometimes, like having, like eating something more savory, and then maybe you take a shake with you to work or something like that, or even like a yogurt bowl mixed with protein and layer some stuff on it. Sometimes that's an easy thing if someone's short on time, but still wants to
have exactly
a protein rich meal. Just quickly. Do you think that, I want to just talk about changing nutrition with the cycle. Do you feel like that changes, like where someone's at in their cycle changes what they should be eating or how much they should be eating?
I feel like it, a little bit. So I don't subscribe to, like, I know years ago, if people have probably read the Elisa Viti book. Can't remember. It wasn't, which one was it? What was it? Not the birth control. There's her second one. Oh, I can't remember the name of it. It was it like something about cycle? It wasn't cycle syncing.
Yeah. No, I can't remember it.
I have it. I have it here. I have it somewhere in my home.
I do too.
And it's great. I don't necessarily subscribe to like, you need to eat these specific foods at each stage of your cycle. That said, I will talk to people about changing it up a little bit based on how you're feeling. So oftentimes in that like second half of our cycle, we are hungrier, we do have more cravings. So maybe we are focusing a lot more. Maybe we do increase our protein intake by like 10, 20 grams in that second half of our cycle. Maybe we are really intentional about choosing high fiber carbohydrates. We're choosing things that are going to help regulate our blood sugar a lot more and regulate the cravings. Because I notice like once we do that, people will tell me that their cravings are way less than they normally are, like those sugar cravings, that kind of roller coaster that they're going on. And then during that first half of their cycle, it's a little bit of like the lighter veggies or, you know, uncooked stuff. If you want to do more like even smoothies, like some people are like, I don't like it. Like the sound of that in the second half of my cycle sounds disgusting. Like, no, thank you. But in the first half or in their ovulating, they're like, yeah, sure. Like I could do a salad. I love that idea. So kind of going with that, I find that's where my recommendations more lean to of like, okay, making sure that you're maybe having like heartier meals, more warming meals in that second phase. And then in those first couple of days of actual like bleeding. And then when you're kind of into more of that follicular phase, you might notice that it's easier to eat a little bit lighter, or people might actually, you know, not necessarily fast, but maybe they'll notice that their hunger isn't as strong in that first half. So maybe they actually will kind of try to aim for like 12 hours overnight of like, I stop eating at 7 p.m. and I start when I wake up at 7 a.m., like whatever that looks like.
Sort of a gentle fast, I guess.
Yeah.
When you were saying that, I kind of think of like your like follicular ovulation is kind of like spring, summer. So
say that all the time, yes.
Lighter foods and like colder foods, and then we're in like luteal menstrual phase where it's like fall, winter, like warming cooked foods, more grounding foods, the soups and stews. And I think in Chinese medicine, they talk about not having like a cold womb. So not drinking really cold smoothies and cold meals and like warm spices and stuff like that, which especially we're headed into the cool months anyways, it's better to have those things. But
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I find it gets too complicated for some people when they're doing the like actual like list of foods. They're like, whoa, I just need to know how to eat healthy. Like this gets too overwhelming and then I get turned off, versus if you're like, okay, let's like really focus on our protein and our carbs, it's a little bit easier.
Yeah, I agree. That was kind of the consensus that I came to, where it's like, it's too, like, unless you're really diligent on tracking and like, I don't know. I'm kind of like simple is better. Yeah. I think the part around that I mostly pull out is just like around my cycle, naturally craving those like the blood building foods and even more honing down on the blood sugar piece, because yeah, I hear from, I'm sure you do too, clients like, you know, do so well. And then all of a sudden it's the week before and it's like, all hell breaks loose. Here's the cravings. And
oh yeah.
And so
yeah.
Well, it's like even, how to manage that.
Totally. And like, even from the fitness side of things, like I don't necessarily have clients do specific like cycle syncing workouts, but it's kind of a, okay, let's actually notice how we feel throughout the entire month. Because if, you know, and I think back to myself, even I remember in my 20s when I'd work out like every single morning, I'd like right before school, I was kind of doing like a diploma program after university for PR, and I would like drive to the gym. I'd work out. And I remember this one day, like just laying on the mat being like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. And then being so mad at myself for feeling that way and being like, how, like I'm pathetic. How, like I'm going to gain so much weight. Like this is ridiculous. Why am I even here? And like just being so upset with myself about the fact that I couldn't work out. And it was just because it was days before my period. Like, had I known back then how cycle syncing, or how like how my cycle can influence my energy levels and my ability to even like live my life and communicate with people and like function, I probably would have been like, oh shoot, you know what? Yeah, I am about to have my period. So how about I just like hop on the treadmill and walk for a little while instead of just like laying here? So I feel like that's a really nice piece of it, because it gives people a bit more permission to not necessarily like ignore their workouts, but maybe like the week before your period, if you can't lift a 20-pound weight when normally you can, that's okay. If you need to drop down to a 15-pound weight, okay, great. Like, or if you're like, I really like, I'm about to get my period tomorrow and everything, like I feel swollen and tender and like the idea of going to a gym right now feels so icky to me and you need to go for a walk, fine. Like, okay. But it's, you know, I think it gives us a lot more permission to understand where we're at and where our body is at, from like a nutrition and a physical activity side. And also like, even from the cognitive standpoint, like the first day of my period, my brain fog is so strong. Like I'm like, I try to talk to my kids and I'm like, I feel like I'm a toddler as well. Like I can't really help you here.
I feel like I could have said what you just said for work, because I feel the exact, I feel like we align on like a lot of our educated philosophy around health and nutrition too. But yeah, I feel the exact same way. I felt like understanding that helped me be more consistent too, where and just what you said, it's not like beating the crap out of yourself when you can't, you had a workout scheduled and it was leg day and you can get through it. It's like, hey, you can still get some movement in, but maybe it is just a walk and maybe doing some stretching. And you know what? In 1 or 2 days, my energy's good. We'll have a good workout then. And I find it just helped me to be a lot more consistent and compassionate. And then when you understand your body too, I think it's such a superpower for a woman to understand her cycle and know what's kind of happening in the body and to honor those things too. And so, we could probably have a whole podcast around cycle stuff.
How many times have we said that this conversation? But you know, this is a whole other conversation.
Yeah. I know, I've started marking them down, but amazing. I think that gives people a lot of really good places to start, whether they're on a fitness journey or health journey or just getting started, or they've already been on one for a little bit and just kind of how to tweak things to optimize their performance, support their hormone health, their energy, their mood, their appetite, all those good things too. So I know you're on Instagram. Is that the primarily place where you, like, if someone's looking to see, like, learn more about you and follow you, is that where you hang out most?
Yes, I definitely say Instagram is probably the place to find me, at Rhiannon Health_ Yeah, that's it. There we go.
I'll make sure I put it in all the notes and stuff and send links and your website at the same time too. Yeah. Is there anything that you're like working on right now or like?
I'm trying to, well, currently I thought I was putting together a new program, and I haven't actually done programs before really. I've just lived off of one-on-one consultations. So I'm trying to put together a program, not like a group one. It's all going to be one-on-one stuff. It's well foundations. But it's taking my time because again, I haven't done it often and I'm scared. So hopefully it'll come out in the next little while, as I kind of move away from just doing one-on-ones.
Yeah,
not one-on-one, sorry, like individuals.
individual. Yeah. I think having a program, like, I don't know, something that I've learned too is, like, most of the time, like, people need more than like one or two sessions.
Yes.
If they're really looking to see a transformation and long-term results. And so I've been there before too, where I'm like, okay, well, just session by session. But I find the people who sign up for programs there, that's where you get that true transformation. You get to work through challenges and things like that a little bit more hands-on.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. Like, I don't get me wrong. A lot of the clients that I like, I've seen clients for a long time, and the people that I do see, they are very consistent. But at the same time, I think just having that commitment and people knowing that that's what they're going in for, it also changes things, because, you know, you go in knowing that you are making a long-term commitment, not the, okay, you know, after this one session, like, I've got it. I just need information and then I can run, because, like, most people don't need that. Like, if you do need that, you're getting a lot of it off of, you can go online and get the same kind of thing. What people need is, like, that accountability and that guidance.
Accountability.
And,
like,
So
that's what I was going to say, that accountability, showing up and knowing that Rhiannon's going to be checking in on me in a couple of weeks. I better get my shit together.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, amazing. Thank you so much for the chat today. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. Same.
Yeah. Up, and thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you. That was awesome. You're really great at this.
Thanks. Pardon?